Support for WPR comes from Viterbo University, dedicated to supporting the state's health with doctoral and master's degrees in nursing, counseling, nutrition, and more. Viterbo.edu/graduate.
Support for WPR comes from the Dram Corporation, based in Manitowoc, Wisconsin. Manufacturers of professional-grade handheld watering nozzles, sprinklers, and cutting tools. More information is at dramm.com.
This hour's theme is laughing at death, and we all need a bit of gallows humor at times to cope with death. But what about the gallows themselves? Are the gallows an appropriate place for humor? Anne Strainchamps wanted to know, so she called up Brian Price. While serving a 16-year prison sentence, Price cooked almost 200 last meals for the condemned on death row in Texas. His book, darkly called Meals to Die For, contains the recipes for those last meal requests. But with recipe titles like Gas Chamber Chicken with Firing Squad French Fries or Guillotine Goulash in Gallows Gravy, you have to wonder, is this funny?
The first recipe that I came up with, I wrote a recipe called Old Sparky's Genuine Convict Chili, Old Sparky being the nickname of the electric chair. And I wanted it in 5,000, 10,000, and 20,000 volts of spiciness. And I was just going to, mild, medium, and hot. And I was just going to leave it like that and just try to market that, sell it to some food company and be some crazy, quirky thing. It would probably sell great. I was going to leave it right there. And then it came to me. I said, well, there's only one way to paint this whole thing. I said, the last meal is not a colorful thing that should be displayed in any other way than in pitch black, which it is, just like the crimes and the executions themselves. So I started coming up with the darkest names possible and tried to have some little ring to them so folks take it as dark humor. I take it just painting everything jet black now. There's only one way to look at the last meal, just like everything else. It's a dark and morbid thing.
When you call things like, uh-oh, I'm dead meatloaf and obituary onion rings and broad axe brown gravy, so do you mean those to be funny or not?
No, not now. Not now. It's a lot of folks are going to think it's funny. When I first started, yes, it was dark humor, and I was going to stop it, like I said, right there. No, I want people to look at it as just what it is, a very dark and morbid thing. And the recipes, whatever the title it has on them, is going to be a person's very last meal on this earth for some dark and horrible crime that they committed. And the victim's family is going to view this man's death. His family is going to view his death. The whole thing is just a very dark and sinister thing. It's like a tragic play where everyone becomes a victim in the end. And I just wanted to keep it just like that and keep it dark and sinister.
Tell me about the first death row meal you ever cooked.
The first meal I prepared was for a man named Lawrence Buxton. That particular day, no one wanted to prepare the last meal. The general policy of Texas Department of Corrections that they didn't force one of the cooks to prepare the last meal. They would ask for a volunteer. And this came from the dinner cooks, the supper cooks, is what we call supper down here in Texas.
Why didn't anybody want to cook this guy's last meal?
Well, that particular day, most guys didn't want to prepare it anyhow because it like gave them the creeps or something. They didn't want anything to do with it. Most of the cooks didn't. And when my sergeant asked if anybody else wanted to do it, I just kind of resigned to the fact, well, I guess I'll do it, Sarge. And so I prepared the meal, and I decided I was going to do my very best and did it with passion. And when I completed, sent it over there, I prayed over it. And then the next day, I was calling my captain's office, and he said, listen, Price, he said, that man that they killed last night, he said he wanted to thank you for that last meal. He said he really enjoyed it. Well, I wouldn't expect anything like that, and well, it just kind of threw me back a little bit. So that day I went back and I reflected upon that and thought about it. That might have been the last thanks that this man ever gave to anyone right before he left this earth. So I went back in the following day. I told my supervisor, I said, listen, if you want me to prepare the last meals from now on, I'll do it, so you don't have to just ask someone to do it anymore and volunteer. And they were all for that because it took a load off of them. So for the next 10 years, I prepared all the last meals from 1991 to 2001, almost 200 of them.
Wow. In the book, you kind of describe what happens sort of minute by minute, like in the kitchen, and in terms of how the whole last meal ritual goes. Can you run me through that?
It is a ritual. Everything is done by time. I usually start around 1 o'clock, start getting things together. By 2 o'clock, I'd do this. And I wanted everything to be fresh and hot and stay hot and be ready to go. We didn't have a hot box, so to speak, that they rolled over there. like if it was a some type of steak or cheeseburger or whatever, I'd start preparing the meat just right around 3 o'clock, and I'd be wrapping them up, and while they're still just right off the fire, the cheese melting on them and such, and have them wrapped up in saran wrap, then we'd cover the whole tray with butcher paper so it could be delivered without anyone seeing what that last meal is as they take it across the yard and through the bull ring into the death chamber. After that, then clean up, and then I'd always go back to my cell, and I'd start watching the clock, because the execution time is usually right at 6 o'clock, and the news would always be covering something on it. And I'd start watching the clock. I had a little digital clock on top of the television. I'd watch those red numbers tick away and say 6 o'clock, 6:01. I'd say, well, he's hooked up to the IV now, 6:03. I said, well, he's probably giving his last statement. 6:05, I said, well, I guess that old poison's starting to flow. He's probably getting put to sleep right now so that he won't feel the poison entering his veins. And then about 10, 15 after, he's gone. From my vantage point in my cell, I was up on the third tier. I could see the yard, which is an asphalt yard there, about 50 meters square, in the walls unit, which is surrounded by 20-foot red brick walls. I could see where the hearse, I'd watch when the hearse would come in, which would be about 10, 15 minutes before the execution was to take place, all the way to when they would bring the body back out. And the whole thing was a very sobering experience.
You said a bunch of the other guys who worked in the commissary didn't really want to cook for the last meals because it gave them the creeps. Why, do you think?
Just the association with the execution, death, and a lot of guys, when it inadvertently made them kind of look at their own mortality, and most of them didn't want to face that. And some of them, but for the grace of God, you know, they could have been right there on that death gurney themselves. A lot of my friends there in prison were murderers, and I believe it just made a lot of them face their own mortality, thinking, man, that could have been me, and they didn't want anything to do with it. Hmm.
Did it feel different to you, cooking somebody's last meal?
Oh, absolutely. I had to not necessarily psych myself up for it, but I prepared myself emotionally and spiritually for it, each one that I prepared. They would give me the last meal request about 3 days ahead of time, and so I knew pretty much what I was going to have to do or what I wouldn't be able to do. And I would start thinking about it then and meditating on it, praying about it and such. And when the day come, I was pretty well ready for it. Now, some were a little bit harder than others, depending on who it was and how celebrated, so to speak, the case was, like Carla Faye Tucker, for instance.
What did she ask for her last meal?
2 bananas, 4 peaches, a nectarine, a sliced cucumber, a garden salad and ranch dressing. My captain that day, Captain Faye Parkins, a very compassionate, godly woman, she came in and brought in some paper plates. Normally we serve the last meals on the officer's dining room, plastic dishes. They were green with a green tray. That particular day, Captain Parkins brought in some little flowered paper plates, very feminine looking. And she said, I want you to put on this, Brian. And then she didn't even leave. She stayed right there with me. She helped me peel the peaches. She sliced them. She arranged them very, very pretty on the plates. And we sliced the cucumber and peeled it. Had everything just looking very nice. Then we wrapped everything like we normally do in saran wrap. And when she was done, Captain Parkins looked down at that plate, and she kind of touched her hair back. Her hair was pulled back kind of short. And I could tell that she was fixing to have an emotional display. And she said, well, that's about the best we can do. And she turned around, walked away right quick, went to her office. Hmm. Well, we sent the plate over there, and Captain Parkins delivered it in person, which he never did. And I warned her about it. I said, Captain, I don't think you ought to go over there, and you know, I don't know if you're up for that. Well, she did, and she met her. And when she came back, I walked into her office, and I said, well, Captain, how was she? And she said, Brian, she was just the sweetest girl. She said she thanked us for the meal, and she said she was praying for us. And I looked at Captain Parkins and I said, well, she handled it pretty well? Like, is she willing to face her maker? And Captain Parkins looked at me and she just burst into tears and she waved me away right quick. And so I left the office and I came back about 10 minutes later when she called me and she apologized for losing it like that. She said, Brian, I shouldn't have went over there. You know, you were right. And Carla Faye Tucker ended up not even eating that meal. I don't know if that's ever been released either. She sent it back just the way we sent it over, still wrapped up. She elected to fast rather than have that last meal.
Was there ever anybody who did something so bad you just felt like you couldn't cook their last meal? You just couldn't do that?
There was only one that I asked to be excused from, and it was Leo Narvaez. He was from San Antonio, which is my hometown, and he murdered 4 children from the ages of 9 to 19. They were friends of my daughter's that she used to walk to school with, And Leo had been dating the 15-year-old girl, Shannon, and when she broke up with him, he couldn't handle it, and he kept harassing and harassing. The family moved away from the neighborhood, even where my daughter was at, and moved to a trailer park on the other side of town. Well, Narvaez, he found out where they was, got coked up one night and drunk, and went over there and in a frenzy, killed them all with butcher knives. The youngest one was stabbed 63 times. One knife was broke off in him, and he grabbed another one and still kept getting him. I always tried to do my very best on every last meal, do it with conviction and with passion. And I felt like I could not do that with the same conviction and the same passion that I did with every other one. So I asked to be excused from that particular one. In the end, he didn't request a last meal, so it worked out regardless. But that was the only one that I asked to be excused from. Hmm.
You said before that before you cooked somebody's last meal, you thought about it a lot. You kind of meditated. Maybe you spent some time praying beforehand. What kind of things did you think about?
Well, being that I researched the crimes, I thought about the crimes they committed naturally. And then I'd also think about, well, why would they order this particular item? One man ordered butter beans, for instance. Can't particularly remember the particular name of that one. But I thought, butter beans. Why would he order butter beans for a last meal? And I started reflecting upon it, and I said, wow, it was probably something that his mom served for him when he was a kid, and it's going to take him back to that time where he could smell the butter beans, and you know how smells and sounds and sights will take you back to a particular time in your life, pleasant and unpleasant. But this particular one would take him back to a pleasant time and maybe give him a little bit of peace and comfort right before he left this world. And so things like that is what I would think about. And naturally, then I prayed for that particular person. You know, me being a Christian, I'd ask for the Lord to deliver them, and I'd hope that they find him before he goes to meet him. And I prayed for myself to be able to get away, and for all the officials, the warden on down the line, to be able to perform this grim task and do it as mercifully as possible, if there is any mercy in that.
Brian Price is the author of Meals to Die For. Price has prepared almost 200 last meal requests for death row inmates at the Walls Unit in Huntsville, Texas. Anne Strangeham spoke with him.
The final meal request for Kevin Lee Zimmerman, the state of Texas, January 21st, 2004. One double meat cheeseburger with lettuce, tomatoes, onions, salad dressing, and ketchup. Half a plate of French fries, almost burnt, with ketchup. Four half pints of milk. One piece of chocolate cake. Lots of icing.
As we go along life's way, there'll be blue skies, there'll be gray, but your good times will be mine.